everyone, and welcome to Hearts and Minds. My name is Siobhan Scullion, and I'm here with Maura Castay, and we're going to talk about the meaning of work, or how can we find meaning in our work?
Exactly, and it's a big one, and I suppose we hear a lot about meaning, actually.
Yeah.
So, and it can sound a little bit, you know, sort of fluffy and kind of, you know,
almost twee.
Yeah, or even just kind of like, you know, sit in a yoga position and feel Mother Nature, and you're going to feel it, you know.
Yeah.
It's for some people who are arty, but most people just have to get bread on the table and get stuff done within a particular, you know, couple of hours every day, and then get home and start the whole rat race again.
Yeah.
So we're trying to step away from that, obviously.
Yeah. Okay.
But it was interesting, actually, and I'm sure loads of people have read these studies or polls that were done, but the famous Gallup polls that are done periodically. There was one done a couple of years ago, and it had, I think, about 142 countries involved. Mm. So it was a pretty global study. And the thing was, it basically was asking about employee engagement. In other words, job satisfaction, meaning, as it were, in my work. And whether people felt their work was important, whether they felt they had opportunities in their work to learn and grow. So I think those are kind of interesting ideas, that meaning usually comes from the fact of, you know, significance. Do I feel my work is actually making a difference?
Yeah. And is it important? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And am I growing, you know, and am I learning, you know, because if we're not, then it's hard, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously, you probably know what the outcome was, or the results were, but 13% of employees felt
13%.
Engagement.
Yeah. That's so low.
It's tremendous. And 63% felt unhappy and unproductive.
Which is too high.
Yeah, exactly. And then 24 were actively engaged. In other words, pushing paper.
Okay.
So now, interestingly enough, the highest levels of engagement were in the United States and Canada. Europe doesn't get a look in terms of that.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And the lowest were in East Asia, you know. Mm. So, and 1 in 8 workers felt psychologically committed to their jobs. So that's really saying that there's a lack of motivation globally.
Oh, okay.
And and then the interesting thing about it, sometimes you might think, oh yeah, okay, certain parts of the world, you know, imagine their sweatshops, you know, very poor conditions, working 24/7. I'm sure that's why they're disengaged.
Of course,
and of course, that is probably a big reason. But the truth is that this study also showed that your economic status didn't seem to have an impact. So some people were getting like $300,000 a year. Mm-hmm. They were still feeling very disengaged and non-productive.
In their work,
it didn't matter your education. So if you had your college degree and your master's degree, or if you were doing, you know, manual work, that didn't seem to make a difference either.
Ah.
So so you might say there's no income level or there's no status level that makes people, you know, less desperate for meaning.
Yeah, or automatically more engaged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I suppose, you know, you could even say, well, look, our churches, our synagogues and our mosques are full of people looking for purpose in their lives. So that in itself... Worldwide,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, I suppose reflecting all that, I suppose it's a couple of thoughts on this topic. Mm. You know, we've often heard the phrase, you know, you need to identify what your values are. What's your mission statement? You know, your personal mission statement. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I look for? You know, because we spend a third of our lives in the workplace or more.
Yeah.
And it's you know, there was that sort of trend and has been around for a while in our countries that, you know, look, if you don't get full satisfaction in your work, you know, it's okay. You can find it in your relationships, your family and your hobbies.
Yeah.
But I think that's a bit of a what's the expression? What am I looking for there, Siobhan?
Oh, it could be like a bit of a cop-out maybe?
Total cop-out. Yeah. Because in a way, like that means a third of your life is just grey, dull and boring.
Like Groundhog Day.
And at the same time, work is such an incredible space. Like work is where you can change the world. Work is where you can co-create. Mm-hmm. Work is where you can grow as a human being.
Yeah, like, and develop your character, develop your virtues.
All of these things.
Develop friendships,
And you can serve others and you can get better at what you do and you discover flow and all of that. And, you know, if you're into, you know, I suppose in the Catholic tradition and the Jewish tradition, you know, it says in the Bible, man was creator and women were created to work.
So
we're created to work. Well, there's something lovely if you've had the experience of doing a good job and going, you just feel that sense of, that was a good day's work done.
You feel a really enormous sense of like satisfaction.
Yes.
And kind of, oh, I'm proud of myself because I worked really hard today, you know.
And it's lovely. And of course, it flows into everything else we do, you know. But I think sometimes, anyway, we'll talk about a couple of other things. But so the whole idea of ideals, you know, because, you know, sometimes in all of our jobs, there's certain work that we kind of, we feel is perpetually unsatisfying, you know, satisfying. Yes. So whether it's folding the children's clothes for the 20 millionth time that day because they consistently refuse to actually fold them, put them away themselves, or whether it's picking up the Cheerios off the floor, it's, you know, just, you know, doing some sort of administrative task or something you feel somebody else should do or whatever it is. And you just feel that sense of,
filling in a timesheet or having to do emails or just clean up after somebody or clean,
Oh, because you're always churning stuff out so fast, you know?
Yeah.
I was struck by something David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, said. You know, he said that, you know, for him, it became the whole thing about churning out, you know, every column every week, you know, and every column felt like a failure because the minute he'd finished one, he was thinking of the next one.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that, don't you?
I totally get that, yeah.
You know, you feel kind of, I'm just like a little cog in the machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then at the same time, you know, you're not doing it to be noticed. Mm. But I think it's what are my ideals? What am I trying to do there? You know, is it, you know, I suppose in his job as a journalist, is he trying to move the conversation to more of a sort of a moral direction or sort of a thinking space or, you know, a mom at home, like you know, when you come home, there's when there's love in the house. Doesn't mean everything's perfect, but you know you've been loved because you can see it in all the details around you. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a sense, it gives you the energy to love back.
Yeah.
You know, or, and I was actually reading something really nice actually about this guy during COVID. He was working in a hospital and he was, I think he was in charge of marketing, you know, and, you know, I suppose connecting, telling people what medical services were like in his particular hospital. Mm-hmm. And he was feeling particularly sort of unenthusiastic about it, you know, because why was he thinking that? Well, simply because everything else around him seemed so serious and important, like saving lives and people on stretchers and, you know, ICU or, you know, and he just felt like his job was so small and inconsequential, like it was strategic marketing. Like, who's interested in marketing in a time of crisis?
Yeah.
And you totally get it.
Yeah, you can see how that would happen,
You know, and he's doing his Zoom calls, you know, how trivial is that? Almost embarrassed to say that he did it. And of course, when you get into that space about your work and you feel it's not relevant and what am I, you just, it's not great for mental health apart from anything else. And so I suppose, I thought it was very interesting, his approach. That he thought, well, he was thinking about his career and his purpose. And he was thinking about his values. And then he started thinking about the fact that, well, stewardship, you know, take the focus off myself and my perceived problems.
Okay.
And see what he did for a living, how it helped others to, how it helped fulfill the needs of others.
Okay.
So I think if we think of our lives, and that's just a nice value, stewardship.
Yeah.
It's, you're not taking center stage. You're kind of going, look, I could be a link in the chain, you know, like, you know, like we, you know, the bus drivers and, you know, the ambulance man and, you know, the food providers were heroes during COVID. Well, just because we don't have a pandemic right now, well, maybe, you know, to discover that in each moment, like St. Jose Maria, the founder of Opus Dei, used to say that where heaven and earth meet, it's not on the horizon, but in your heart and mine, when we see the, when we do things, you know, we see the divine opportunity in each moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lovely thing. Do we discover that divine? We don't have to feel it.
Yeah.
But it's that sense of, well, what's my purpose in right now? You know, and it may not appear to me as sort of critical. I may not find it super enjoyable, but how can I use, you know, my skills and my talents just to do good? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you have a really limited budget, but you're going to stick to it because you're trying to, you know, reduce the taxpayers, you know,
whatever,
kind of funding, whatever it is, you know. But it's, and I think what's really nice about that is that, you know, in his case, he's thinking, I'm not just marketing and selling stuff. I'm helping people to get the medical, you know, access medical care that they need, which is really important during the pandemic. Yeah.
And to help them to do that. To
exactly.
Make it, to make life easier for somebody.
Yeah. And somebody else going, oh, that's great. That's there. So people knew straight off. So I think we need to give ourselves, you know, the opportunity to stand back from work whenever we're like that and going, well, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Where do I serve others through my work? Mm-hmm. And then I think we can really change it. You know, the other thing that can happen sometimes as well is that, you know, our core values, you know, we can be doing really well and delighted with our work. And then something personal happens that throws us.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a breakup in a relationship or maybe it's something and you're just completely thrown by it. And things can really go down the tubes in that situation. And how do you pick yourself up after that? You know, and I was very struck by, you know, another testimony of another guy I was reading during the week. And he was kind of making the point, he said, in times of crisis, again, he was reflecting on COVID, he said, the most valuable workers are people who do the simplest work. And, you know, his sense of gratitude for people, Like I was in the hospital with a teenager. I was on a camp with teenagers and one of the girls, we need to go into hospital. And the ambulance personnel were just amazing.
Yeah.
So lovely, so calm. Yeah. So
they are a very special breed of people.
And
definitely.
I just think day after day, they're just doing this, you know, and they're not the surgeons, they're not this, but they have such a sense of the value of what they do and the sense of the person. And they're the people you remember.
Of course, yeah.
And they're the people who help you face into the long wait in A&E.
Yeah,
or the kind of, you know, the kind of quiet, scared face of the doctor, you know. So that sense of gratitude, what am I grateful for? Mm. You know, maybe it's the fact that, I don't know, that, you know, I can get out of bed in the morning and I can do so much and I have an education. Yeah. I don't know. It's different for every person. But I think as well, it helps us, I suppose, to think that we don't need to personally be the hero. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need to be the one getting the accolades or the affirmation. Yeah. But we do need to try to do our best to be helpful in whatever way we can. And that's what the common good is all about.
Yeah.
It's about our effort to make things. And we just don't know who we're going to touch in our day.
Yeah.
You know, and even by just doing it with that attitude, heart and soul, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of humility about the way we do things, I think is huge. Mm. The other thing, I suppose, is recognizing meaningful moments in our work, you know, and that comes from, I suppose, you know, being able to sort of embrace and to celebrate processes. Mm-hmm. Like a process sounds like a conveyor belt to me. But so much of our day can all be about just processes, you know, and there's effort involved. You know, sometimes you end up doing things, you think, God, a machine could do this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're thinking, God, I'm really quite useless. I don't really have a brain cell anymore left.
Oh, no, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I was very struck by reading again David Brooks, a journalist. He was talking about the fact that, you know, he writes 800 words a week, mm-hmm. you know, in his column, but he reads 200 pages of research in order to do that.
Yeah.
And he said for him, it's putting all those little, you know, columns of paper on the ground, and he's basically, each of them has a topic. Yeah. And then he sifts through them and sifts through them and sifts through them. Goodness. And he said, those piles of paper are the best moment of my job, moving them around. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's almost like a prayer.
Goodness, yeah. To put it all together.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't know about you, but sometimes I go, God, why is it, you know, what's the effort involved? I wish, I'm obviously no good at this if there's effort involved.
Yeah.
But effort, we put effort into things that we value mm-hmm. and we find meaning in and purpose in. So I would just encourage your listeners to think, is where do you put your effort? Mm-hmm. That's where you find your meaning.
Yeah.
And if there are things you're not putting effort into, but you know you should, well, put and embrace it. That's your space. Uh-huh. Don't rush it for anybody.
Okay.
You know, that could be whatever it is. And that's mm-hmm. so personal, you know, in your work. And then the other thing as well is that sometimes we forget is that we need to enjoy our work. And I don't mean that superficially, but there has to be a sense in every job that there's something of me there. Because if there is something you're kind of flourishing with, well, then you're going to do a good job. And that sometimes means changing career.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, feeling like you're needed, you know, because you might say the greatest, engine of misery in our society is the fact of feeling superfluous.
Yeah.
And I suppose sometimes we can feel superfluous because sometimes we don't feel people value us.
Yeah.
But that's where it has to come from, an inner core of, well, you know, okay, obviously if we need a rise in salary or better treatment in the workplace, we need to call people out on that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is that sense of, well, I don't need to be affirmed to know what I do is a good job. Yeah.
You don't have to be thanked for everything or everything acknowledged, you know, in a sense that, yes, acknowledgement is really necessary. Of course, in our work, like, you know, you do need to be kind of validated and told, actually, you've done a good job there. But at the same time, you know, you can't expect somebody to do that for every single task.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So that's why, you know, it has to come from somewhere deeper.
Oh, it has to. Absolutely. And I think in our world, because of social media and likes and affirmations, that really complicates that space. Because unless you feel
an
influencer, you're not really doing anything, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really a lot to do with the other thing, I suppose, if you feel you're serving people, well, then it's easier to feel happy about what you do. You know, we're all familiar with that study of, you know, janitors in a hospital in the States, and they're asked, you know, what do you do? One said, I wash the floor. Another one said, you know, I create a safe environment for my patients. Another one says, I help my patients to get better.
Yeah.
You know, typical things. They wouldn't clean the floor or Hoover if they saw there was a family in a particular sort of sitting room area because they felt they need to sleep. I'm not going to Hoover.
Yeah. Okay.
So they actually had the ability, because they had the vision of their work, they had the ability to make decisions you know, themselves, but how they were going to do the work.
Okay, yeah.
So that's also an important, you know. And again, I suppose some people would compare work to or career to a marriage, you know, and I don't know if I'd go that far, but there is a point about it that, you know, you don't enter into marriage thinking, well, is this a cost-benefit analysis? You know, what am I getting out of this? You know, am I getting more out than I'm putting in?
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that with our jobs either. You know, it's kind of like, I think the question needs to be, who can I serve?
Mm-hmm.
And what am I pouring my love into? And am I all in this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was very struck by an interview with Barack Obama, and he had two very interesting points. You know, he's saying to people going into the workplace, he said, look, if a problem shows up, a really good thing to do for your own personal growth,
mm-hmm.
and I connect this to service, is to think, I can take care of that.
Yeah, okay.
Just, you know, so if you're in a team meeting and somebody goes, oh, this, and you can say, look, do you know what, I'll take care of that.
I'll take care of it.
You're not going for the sort of the, I want to be noticed.
Yes, okay.
And that's, and
it's
I think
like a
that's
the hidden work.
And you're not doing it to be noticed. You're going, you know, I can, somebody, what you want in the workplace is somebody you can rely on.
Yeah.
That if things go wrong, they'll be able to hold the baby.
Okay.
You know, they're able to negotiate. They're able to, you know, pivot. They're able to do whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was such a lovely recognition of the value of patience, mm-hmm. hard work, endurance, and humility.
Yeah. And it's a very practical thing as well.
It's very super practical.
Yeah.
You know, you always, if somebody, you know, and the work goes, listen, don't worry about that, I'll do that. And I just, they're the people I would always go to because I know they're watching your back and I'll watch theirs. But,
mm-hmm.
And then the other one he kind of made the point about is, you know, in your work, there would be something that you just get lost in that you absolutely love.
Yeah.
And you get passionate about. And he said, you know, that's really good because you're putting yourself there. You're there's part of you there. There's a kind of sense of, oh, and then you bring all your talents, your imagination to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really nice one, actually. Funnily enough, actually, I think it's the English writer, is it? Yeah, Dorothy Sayers, you know, she said, you know, when she was trying to serve a community, you know, she said she got so fixated on whether the community appreciated her efforts or not. And and she said the best way to truly help somebody is to seek to do your job well, to serve the work itself. So you can't always be looking to, did they thank me, your point, you know, because, and that's important.
Because we can tie ourselves up in knots. Yeah.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And then again, I suppose asking yourself why you do what you do as opposed to what do you do? You know, because we so often say, what do you do? And but why do you do it?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we can fall into things like the paycheck or the power of it. You know, I have a really good, you know, I've been promoted. My LinkedIn page is amazing. And, you know,
the location
I've got so many.
Is great, so handy.
Yeah. And I've got so many. I've got, you know, I'm LinkedIn with 1,000 people and, you know, everything looks amazing. And all those things are great, obviously. Or the pleasure of it, you know, or the fame of it.
If somebody asked me, why do you do what you do? I'd be thinking, oh gosh. What a question. I'd be stumped. It's good. It's a good one to reflect on.
It is good because I think you need to have it there to help you through moments that are a bit more challenging or to help you to stay true to yourself when you, you don't feel, you feel like, you know, starting off the nice work.
Yeah. Because we all get tired. Yeah.
Totally.
You want to do the tough bit stuff. Yeah.
So it's supposed to be, and we do all want to money and we want to pay our bills and all that. It's not to undermine any of those things, but it is important to sort of reflect on, you know, why I do what I do, because then that'll help us to actually do find the meaning that we need.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of other thoughts, you know, following the fear, you know, because what would you do if you weren't afraid? You know, that's a very good, it gives
it's
you
a good question.
It
to
is,
ask,
I think.
Yeah.
Because so often we hold ourselves back. And I would say for women too, you know, if we lose our confidence, if we've been out of the workplace for whatever reason, if we're doing a job we're not particularly liking at a particular time, you need to always find something in your work that you go, well, that I like. You know, or push out the boundaries a bit, you know. Every job involves a certain amount of pain, certainly. But there also needs to be a certain amount of pain of just kind of, you know, being bold, doing something new, doing something different, challenging yourself a bit, you know. And then, of course, being conscious of life stages, because, of course, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it's all amazing and great and you're making big discoveries and you have loads of confidence and everything. And then, you know, your 40s and 50s, you know, is, you know, obviously you've been around for a while and you can do your best work then. And then your 60s or 70s is the time just maturing. And the lovely thing about that time of life is that you're kind of discharging your batteries.
Yeah.
But you're charging the next generation.
Yeah.
You know, and they say the unhappiest people are people who are trying to be in their 20s and 30s when in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah, okay, rather than embracing the stage that they're at.
Yeah, and the fact that you're more of a mentor role now or you're more of, you know, kind of, you're still trying to compete, you know, do the long hours, do this and do that and the other. And of course, you do want to do interesting things, but there is a certain element of humility, and I keep saying that, actually.
Yeah.
But the way we work and how we work and... And you will see people who are brighter and sharper and quicker and more enthusiastic than you are, and they're maybe younger, and bully for them and encourage them all the way. And that's not easy always, you know. Not investing everything in our work, because we're all really familiar with that, you know. Balanced, you know, is of course critical. And what do we need for that? You know, of course, family, community, you know, faith or spirituality, service, you know. And because otherwise, if you've just got the one thing, your work, and that can happen at times because we're under pressure or insecure in our job, and we're just trying to get everything done because we're not sure when the next bomb is going to arrive. Mm-hmm. And you can be on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And that's very wearing. And it's a bit like, you know, you remember Grexit? Remember when the Greeks were almost going to pull out of European Union because their economy collapsed? Uh-huh. Well, it's a bit like investing in Greek bonds.
Yeah.
You know, just by, you know, investing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think not a good plan. And I suppose just to think about it, I kind of just four little points just to finish with. You know, two things they found that made people happiest in their work. One was creating value. Mm-hmm. In other words, they felt that by what they did, they were actually, you know, moving the needle, as it were, in their workplace. And they were recognized for it. And that's how they define success.
Okay.
And you don't always get recognized for it. So that can't be either. But it's good that people are recognized, you know. And then the other thing is serving people. So it felt needed by that. And those two things, you know, creating value and serving people, were the two things that really helped people to stay in their jobs, to be productive in their jobs, and to be happy. Mm. And again, if you're in a position of management, those are things you need to look out for.
Yeah.
You know, are people recognized for their accomplishments? And sometimes we don't. And are people creating value because of their unique skill set?
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't do that because maybe the budget doesn't allow it. But still, even if you verbalize it, it's important. Mm-hmm. The other thing as well, I think, is always in a lot of people's minds is the fact that it's very easy, not very easy, but it's easier to do those things when you're in person. And a lot of people are spending time in front of Zoom screens. And it's hard to earn your success. They're not getting the promotions because they're not seen.
Yeah.
You know, some people love working from home, some people don't. But I wonder, are we fooling ourselves a bit? You know, like there's a lot of chat and even journalists talking about, you know, the enriching ideas always come from engagement with others. We're human and social animals. You know, we need to have that interaction. We get lonely. And if you're lonely, actually, you know, that executive center of your brain, and this is my idea, this is from Arthur Brooks, a sociologist, that basically what happens is it's impaired, you know, and that's why we just go for the comfort then, you know, the Netflix and the ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I suppose the reaction to that is get out, get on a bike, meet somebody, call a friend. Mm-hmm. And we have agency in this, you know. Happiness is just all about everything out there working for me and showing up the way I want it, you know, it's how do you take the leap? What are you going to do? You turning, you know, it's easier to say than do, but it is always helpful to keep at the forefront of your mind. Look, are these, you know, are they stepping stones or are they stumbling blocks?
Okay.
Yeah. And trying to see life more is, look, is there a silver lining here? And there's always silver linings.
There's
and
an
things.
Opportunity there somewhere.
It's an opportunity. Yeah. Maybe you need to totally change something, you know, and if everything is telling you something, well, you need to stand up and listen.
Yeah. You know? And you can take responsibility for it.
You can.
You have responsibility.
You have,
for
absolutely.
It,
The other thing that's interesting as well is that, you know, sometimes people can find, you know, they can manage stuff like your complicated problems at work, you know, they're managing, you know, that computer programming, or they're managing, you know, that staff issue, or they're managing, I don't know, productivity flows, whatever it is you do.
Yeah.
But what they're not managing maybe is their emotional life, you know, how you feel. And that's because it's a different species of problem. Mm-hmm. And because work, it can be complicated, but once you figured it out, you figured it out. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and you can sometimes repeat the same solutions. Okay, depending if it's complex, you can't.
Yeah.
But if it's complicated, you can. Whereas life and your emotions, well, that's really the affairs of the heart. And that's complicated because, you know, it's no amount of, say, sort of computer horsepower can actually sort that out. The only way, and I was very interested to read this, the only way you can actually, you might say, process and flourish if you're, you know, going through, you know, in your understanding of your emotions, is to really experience them and work through them in real time.
Yes, yeah.
So you need to experience the downs and you need to experience the highs.
Yeah.
You need to feel the pain and do it anyway. And you need to feel it. You need to understand your human emotions. You know, because if you don't, and sometimes we just don't want to experience them.
Yeah, because they're uncomfortable.
Because they're uncomfortable.
They can be uncomfortable, yeah.
And it's, And I thought that, you know, and learning how to experiencing them, not as they're delivered to you. You know, sometimes you can, you know, have that sense of this is terrible, this is awful, or God, whatever. That's where the frontal cortex comes in, you know, is deciding how you want to react to that.
Yeah.
You know, almost do a kind of a, you know, a kind of as objective bystander approach. Yeah. And this is showing up, this seems negative, but I'm not sure that's the full picture here. So everybody says this, acknowledging your emotions and then thinking, okay, let's just process this.
Yeah, what's actually going on here?
Exactly.
Yeah, before I react.
And of course, the big guru on this is Arthur Brooks, you know, who's on The Science of Happiness and Harvard, and he has loads of stuff online.
There's loads of things about him,
throw them at the bottom of the podcast. Yeah. He's big into this thing called metacognition and all that. I'm not an expert on it remotely. But, you know, his whole point was, he said he worked 80 hours a week and he was really missing out on life, and he was really what he'd call like one of these hyper characters, and he had profound highs and profound lows. And he said, okay, he developed a toolkit to be able to understand your emotions, to acknowledge your emotions, and then to process them with your frontal cortex. And he said, you know, basically it works. You know, if you, happiness and unhappiness are opposites. One isn't good and one isn't bad. Like if you have unhappy thoughts or unhappy emotions, it's not because you're,
a bad person.
No. You know, they just exist, you know, in different parts of the brain, and they're produced for different reasons. And it's understanding that. So I just think that's an important thing to remember and to think about. And obviously, social media is a huge thing here, because, you know, you look at the statistics and, you know, before social media, they don't want social media, they said 30% of people were actually said happy and 15% said they weren't so happy. And this is in the States. And then it reverted, you know, during COVID and it has never since turned back. And they put that down to the fact that people got just totally addicted to social media because there's nothing else you could do. And he makes the point, actually, and again, I'm going back to Arthur Brooks on this because it ties in with his, you might say, science of happiness, that what happens is, first of all, comparisons. So when you're on social media, all you do is see comparisons. And if you're feeling a bit flat about something, you look for distraction rather than face it. And the first thing you do is you go for your social media, which is a bit like eating, you know, burgers and chips. You know, there's loads of calories, but there's no nutrition. So you're not helping yourself. You're not changing things. And you get bored and you get very lonely. And habits are what change things. So habits and how you perceive yourself. So, you know, who am I? You know, I'm deeply loved and I can always love people. You know, your relationships, all those kind of things, and how you perceive yourself and how you perceive others are hugely important in all of this. You know, Chesterton used to say we should work like children, and they play.
They do, and that is the work of a child,
Exactly, and they just pick up the daisy, and they'd spend hours making daisy chains, and if it broke, they'd spend another hours making another daisy chain because they get totally lost in it. And it was all about not how I feel about this, but isn't this a wonderful thing to do? So I suppose that goes back to the idea of tying in with your core values and things like that. We do need to go deep in our work, so that, you know, it's good if we can, during our work week, you know, find maybe 90 minutes just to be able to sit and dig into some project uninterrupted and feel you can just flow there and do it.
And not to be afraid to block that time off, you
critical.
Know, because sometimes we, you know, in a work environment, especially if we're in a team, we sometimes worry, okay, oh, I have to be available 24/7 for such for some reason. But no, you know, that kind of idea of having deep work and, you know, really allowing your kind of process, you know, to flow is really important for your own kind of sense of satisfaction as well.
Because otherwise you just feel you're doing treadmill stuff. And there's no sense of what should I do during the week. You know,
just
and
kind of,
and it can be different for different people. But as you say, you feel at the end of it, you know, God, that's something I did and I'm proud of it. And it may not be something big. Like it could be cleaning out a cupboard if you're a stay-at-home mom. But it could be finishing a report. It could be preparing a meeting well. Even if you don't feel like the meeting, you're turning it around and going, you know what, I'm going to prepare this really well. Or it could be something like stepping into a conflictual conversation and you go, look, I'm going in with a positive mindset, or I need to be empathic here. I need to listen. And the fact that you feel you were the bigger person, or you you went in properly and well prepared, well, that's an achievement.
It
and
is,
that, you know, you've stood back and you've thought, well, how do I want to show up here? And the great thing of all of this, that meaning in work, you know, if we do find our meaning in our work, which does take intentionality.
It does,
You know, and being in the present moment. Like this moment now, Siobhan, that we're doing this podcast will not come again.
It won't. No, it won't.
You know.
Actually, I had to pause to think about that for a second. No, it will never come again.
And we don't value our time because we don't value ourselves sometimes. So we need to stand tall and value ourselves and think, I am doing this, so this is a work worth doing well.
Mm.
And then I suppose going into that, I suppose, you know, we always finish on a, well, try to introduce a spiritual sense and all this, but
yeah.
The beautiful thing about our work is that our work transforms us.
Mm.
It transforms the world we live, and it can transform other people. And it's for ordinary people who spend a third of their lives in the workplace, you know, it is the hinge of our being saints.
Mm.
And saints is the best version of yourself in the Catholic tradition.
Yeah.
So we do need to take it seriously.
Of course.
Because
yeah.
if we're not taking, I don't mean serious intense, but I mean seriously in the sense of value it.
Yeah, to value that, that it's worthwhile and
yeah,
it's worth doing well. Yeah.
It's worth doing well and it's worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is really worth doing well because you are worth doing it well.
Mm.
And others you show up for are worth doing it well for.
Yeah.
And then the beautiful thing is, because, you know, that whole book, Small is Beautiful, but more than anything is, when you do your work well, we can transform it into something holy,
mm.
you know, divine.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus Christ spent 30 years hidden life working as a yeah. carpenter.
Yeah, and like watching that, Joseph work, yeah.
And learning from Joseph. And, you know, what does that tell us about our work? Is that it is divine. In other words, it's godly. It's sacred. So mm-hmm. What do? We just try to connect it, you know, not do it the best we can within the time that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough. And yeah. that's holy.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. We're not looking for perfection here. We're not looking for accolades here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all work is of equal value,
mm.
you know? So I always love that story. St. Jose and Maria in a get together. He was with a bunch of people. Some of them were members of Opus Dei. And one of them was a man who'd become a priest. And before mm-hmm. that, he was an architect. And St. Jose Maria, and it was in Mexico, and St. Jose Maria said, you know, that son of mine over there, you know, he's built some of these amazing skyscrapers. And you might ask me, is his work of more value than this daughter of mine over here, you know, it's another member of Opus Dei who makes baskets for a living
mm-hmm.
and sells them for very little. You might mm-hmm. say, much more humble task. And he said, no, he said, the one that's, you know, of greater value in God's eyes is the one that's done with greater love.
Mm.
So it's all about the love
yeah.
that you put in your work. And I think that's, we can all love.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we should finish on.
Perfect. I was just going to say that is the perfect way to finish. That's perfect, Maura. Thank you so much. And thank you to all our listeners. Please like and subscribe and download and share our episodes and get in touch with us. We always love to hear from our listeners. So thank you so much. And Maura, thank you. And we'll chat again soon.